WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Kay Sawyer Paul, one of my cohorts at FairToFlare.com, and also the Footnotes of Wrestling. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
We are here continuing the series on final matches at WrestleMania. Today it's WrestleMania 7, Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter. Kind of a little bit of a controversial time, just kind of using the whole Gulf War situation and Sergeant Slaughter being the turncoat, the longtime American hero who had turned his back and become a Saddam sympathizer. And that definitely was a very controversial thing at the time for WWE to do. And you were, you told me before the show this was your first pay-per-view you ever watched live, is that correct?
That's right. As a kid, this is the first one I watched live. And I didn't watch it, not live. The first pay-per-view I ever watched.
Oh, okay.
I watched it on a tape.
Okay.
About a month after.
Okay.
My grandfather had recorded the pay-per-view and gave me the tape to watch, and I was so excited. And I enjoyed a good portion of the show, and then found myself at the main event confused and a little disappointed and sad, but mostly confused as an 8-year-old. And of course, later on, I would learn about the first Iraq War and Sergeant Slaughter's turncoating, and how Hulk Hogan was becoming a slightly less important character in WWE at the time. But in the first viewing of this match, it was just I didn't know why this was happening. I didn't know how WWE had sort of fallen, in a sense, because it felt like this WrestleMania was so much smaller than other ones that I had read about and seen clips of, you know. It just, like, as a kid, really odd.
Mm-hmm. Did you think, like, that?
And I didn't know who any of the celebrities were.
Okay.
Who were in the match.
Not even Alex Trebek?
I was 8, dude.
Well, okay.
I didn't know
who
Alex Trebek was.
All right, fair enough. You know. Now, did you think that Slaughter had any chance of beating Hulk Hogan? I mean, did that, like, even enter in your mind just kind of based on the way that Slaughter looked and, you know, because he kind of seemed old and out of shape to me, so.
Again, I'm going to sort of look at this match throughout this podcast as an 8-year-old, because I think that first viewing, that sort of virgin viewing, is important.
Okay. Right.
And I don't really remember any of the others as, like, a first view, so I'm going to sort of cherish this. And I want to say no, I didn't think Slaughter had a chance of winning, but I think it's because even as an 8-year-old, I thought that this match seemed rigged, in a sense, like not fair, like totally choreographed. I wasn't quite at that point yet where I knew it was all fake, but this one didn't feel real at all to me.
Yeah, I think that's that's an interesting assessment. And I was watching at the time. I was a bit older. I was about 11. And I'd been watching for a few years, and this definitely felt like the first time where, like, Hogan, like, really, like, this didn't seem like a challenge to Hogan, you know, like, where, yeah, the WrestleMania before, he fought, like, guys who were worthy, you know, in a sense, or who had, like, you know, who were on his level, and just Slaughter, for whatever reason, just seemed, it seemed like a cheap gimmick, I guess, essentially, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know if I didn't think of it as on those terms when I was 11, but, you know, basically, that's, you know, basically what it was, so. I actually do think the match itself is pretty good, and we can kind of get into that. But
and I certainly didn't care about match quality when I was eight.
Well, no, but I mean, you care about like if a match is like, I mean, you care about it like if the match is like exciting and is interesting and.
Of course, and I didn't find this one exciting whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
And that's not to say I didn't find it exciting later. I think it's a more it's a way more interesting match as an adult, someone who has a, you know, even a passing idea of American politics and xenophobia and how the American media system portrays foreigners to its own people. It's far more interesting if you read it in that respect. But as an 8-year-old, I'm just like, what is this? Why is Hulk Hogan fighting this old guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, they're about the same age, so it's, you know.
But he looks so much older than Hogan, right?
Right, yeah. Well, you know, and he's just, yeah. And he's not really as fat as he got, but he's definitely, he looks out of shape. He looks like my, you know, my grandpa probably did at the time, or, you know, maybe a little younger. But basically, yeah, he did not, other than, you know, being a big guy, he did not have any, you know, the look. I guess, you know, I was just so used to the guys, you know, like Hogan or, you know, the big muscular jacked up guys, to see a guy like Slaughter, even though I've been aware of him through G.I. Joe and through, you know, that character, but, you know, I hadn't really seen him much. I mean, he was in the AWA for a while, but I didn't really watch AWA or have access to that. So, you know, he was a guy that, you know, most wrestling fans knew, but it wasn't like, you know, the exposure to him, you know, I hadn't had much exposure to him for a while. So when I finally saw him, it's like, oh, now he's this old guy, you know. And so anyway,
the other thing is, I'm a Canadian.
Yeah.
So the whole story of, like, you know, Iraq and the U.S. didn't really have anything to do with me. So I couldn't really emotionally relate. Like, you know, I remember asking my dad around this period of time, probably because of this match, I was like, what's going on in, I guess, Iraq? And he was like, nothing. Because at the time, nothing was. Like, it was over.
Yeah. Yeah, it had just finished, too. I mean, it was like a few weeks before that it was, you know, and really the war essentially, you know, really only lasted a few weeks of, you know, being serious. And then it kind of just became clear what was going on, if my memory serves correctly, as far as, you know, that war went. But yeah, I mean, it's funny how long they stuck with this story, even though, I mean,
went until the summer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it would have made sense to completely end it here, but yeah, they stretch it out. And, you know, at that point, I think they were just kind of beating a dead horse. It's interesting in both the promos that Hogan does before the match and some of the language that Monsoon uses throughout the commentary, of how much it really reflects like some of the like language I remember of the time of people like describing the war. Like in Hogan's promo, he talks about how Slaughter knows only ground warfare, but the Hogan of 1991 has adapted to new technology. And also he says that he did a 360 once Slaughter attacked him and is going to change his tactics.
You know what? That's funny, because this is like the one match in Hogan's career where he gets up on the top rope.
Yeah, that's true. He does adopt the aerial tactics.
What is that? Why he does that?
It never occurred to me, but that's interesting. That
Hogan is not a top rope guy ever.
Not usually. I mean, he did it also during the Andre Hogan the main event one, the one where Hogan lost the title. He does a little bit of, but it's not. He does it more in this match than I think any other match. You know, other than maybe that other one. So. But you know, Monsoon describes Hogan as our national hero, the whole nation looking to him to get the job done, you know, kind of reflecting the, I remember during this time, there was sort of a debate whether, you know, the troops that had basically won the ground war should, you know, press on into Baghdad and get the job done to get rid of Saddam, kind of thing, you know. And also Hogan is described later, I think when he goes off the top rope, but maybe not, he's a Patriot missile ready to explode at any moment. And the Patriot missiles were nicely coined missiles that I think, you know, were able to counter some of the Scud missiles that were from Iraq. And
I'm remembering what he said, but in no way connecting the context to what you're mentioning, because again, like I'm looking at this as a kid and I'm thinking, well, they're just threatening each other. This isn't actually connected to anything real.
Right.
But it's actually amazing how much it was. Like, it's WWE gets a lot of flack sometimes for missing the mark. But here, they really went for it.
They did go for it, yeah.
Like, they really, really hit down on this one political issue. And WWE is typically a pretty politically neutral storyteller.
Yeah.
But this time, this one, it was just so, like, so red state about everything.
Yeah, but there was no vocal opposition or of any significance to this war. Like, you know, it was a pretty, you know, Bush, yeah, like had 90% popularity, and it was, mm-hmm. you know, and it had been a long time since the United States had been in a real war. So I think people, like, I remember as a kid, I was like, ooh, a war, it's kind of exciting. Like, I had no real context for how horrible war can be. I mean, I learned about wars in school, but I was naive and silly about it. And, you know, I think, and part of that was probably just because of, like, everyone around me and, like, all the media and, you know, all the radio stations or whatever, or, like, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, yeah, Iraq war, you know, we're
such a different
great.
Time.
Get rid of Saddam. Yeah. It's funny. There was, I guess, sort of a, you know, like a naivete to it. And but this obviously is like, you know, it had been a while since they really heavily hammered the, you know, U.S. versus, you know, foreign powers thing. I mean, that mm-hmm. was kind of more like an 84-85 thing with Slaughter and Iron Sheik, Hogan against various Russians, you know, Nikolai Volkov and stuff. I mean, they hadn't hit it hard, at least not like at a WrestleMania level. It was kind of even like harkening back, you know, a few years. And
I'm not even sure they ever even hit it on a WrestleMania level. I mean, Sheik wasn't involved in any of the WrestleManias, right? If you go back, like, WrestleMania 1 through 6, all of the main events were white guys, American white guys.
Right.
Right?
Well, but yes.
Okay, fair. But certainly French is hardly, like, foreign in terms of wrestling, right? They would dabble in, of course, these storylines throughout the year, but when it came time to the big show, They sort of put that away and did the big guy matches. But it's almost confusing. I almost feel like in 1991 they could have benefited from having a monthly pay-per-view in between Rumble and WrestleMania that they could have done this on, and then in WrestleMania 7 done something else.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I know there was talk at the time of I've read that there was talk at the time, because I wasn't really plugged into anything, but of doing Hogan Warrior rematch at this point. Mm-hmm. And I guess Warrior's title reign wasn't very successful, you know, box office wise. So they decided, you know, they moved away into this instead, you know, which is hard to imagine them believing this would do better than Hogan Warrior rematch. But, you know, just because of, you know, how hot WrestleMania 6 was.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing about this crowd is, you're right, I mean, it's very much a smaller WrestleMania, and, you know, the celebrities are less exciting, and it's very much, you know, it does feel like, you know, they're falling a bit. But, I mean, the crowd throughout this entire show, not just this match, but this crowd is amped for this. I mean,
they were canned.
No, I don't think so.
They were canned. It's very well known. WrestleMania 7's audience was canned.
Huh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Speaking as an 8-year-old, I'm very sure of this. Speaking as a 27-year-old guy who writes a blog and tries to be very sure of these things, not so much.
I see.
But
okay.
This was what I was told when I was, like, young, was that, like, and this is information I knew before there was an internet to tell me this information.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't, like as I'm saying now, I'm not sure how true it is.
Okay.
But it's one of those little kernels of information that sticks with you.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I gotcha.
But, it does seem oddly loud, especially during some of the matches earlier on in the show that really weren't very good. And that's not to say there weren't good matches in WrestleMania 7. There were a couple very, very good ones.
Yeah.
But like, it was loud throughout the show consistently, is weird.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know if there's something to the idea of, you know, this sort of thing, you know, while it may, you know, it's sort of like rallying your base. Like, you know, it fires up the people who are really with you while maybe turning off some of the people who are only kind of marginally with you.
Maybe. And I will say this, Hogan and Slaughter is a very one-sided affair in many ways. The crowd has no patience for Slaughter. Cheers every blink by Hogan. And Slaughter gets almost no offense.
Oh, I don't know. There's actually a pretty decent there's a pretty decent length segment where Slaughter does actually get some, you know, it's kind of working them back. And
oh, that's later on, right? Like the first 10 minutes are all Hogan.
Oh, no question. Yeah, Hogan dominates the early portion of the match. Yeah, no question about it. Yeah. They stall for a little while. Like Slaughter definitely like taking his time, you know, like getting his jacket and his belt off. Yeah, after Hogan had kind of chased him and Adnan, his manager General Adnan around the ring. Hogan's, you know, gearing up, he's anxious to go, and you know, Slaughter's, you know, kind of delaying a little bit, which I think even heats the crowd up a little more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They do kind of a, you know, big lockup thing in the corner, and Hebner keeps kind of getting between them to break them up, but then like Hogan keeps shoving him away, you know, and Hogan's very impatient. Like he wants to go at it, you know. He wants to get to the guy, and you know, and there's various machinations that kind of keep him from getting too much into it. One thing I want to mention in the commentary, this is the first WrestleMania with Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, and I don't think it's quite as strong as WrestleMania 8, which is just like intensely classic. But there's
so good between those two at that show.
Yeah, and you know, it's good here. I do enjoy. Slaughter complains about a hair pull, which Monsoon kind of points out as being absurd since Slaughter doesn't have much hair. And then Heenan's one of my favorite Heenan lines ever. It doesn't cost any more to complain.
It's true.
Yeah, it's a wise thing to take into consideration. So one thing, you know, one of Slaughter's strengths as a wrestler is his ability to kind of bump, you know, for his size. And he really does take a lot of, you know, kind of big bumps here to make it interesting, you know, on shoulder blocks and on different, you know, he running clotheslines and, you know, atomic drops. I mean, he just kind of flips around everywhere and, you know, goes over the ropes a few times and really does, you know, make the action interesting. And what are you going to say?
No, I agree. Like, this is actually a really... I almost feel like Slaughter's wrestling a better match by losing than Hogan's wrestling by winning, you know?
Okay.
Like, this is not an 8-year-old viewpoint, but if you look at the performance, I'd say Slaughter gives a better performance than Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
You go back and look at Slaughter's career, and Slaughter doesn't get beat up throughout the whole match like he does in this match. And in the story, it makes sense because this is pure catharsis. Everybody showed up to watch Hogan beat Slaughter, right? They didn't show up to watch a classic match between the two of them,
right?
Like they did a year before with Hogan and Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
This was purely let's go watch Slaughter die, and die he does. For, you know, this match is much longer than I remember it.
Yeah, it's more than 20 minutes. It's actually one of the longer final matches in WrestleMania history. You know,
mm-hmm.
Top five, I think. So.
And you can see the sweat on him. That the hair that he does have is just so disheveled. He's gassing and breathing hard the whole time. And, his camo makes him look like he's sweating probably more than he is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I don't know. He just looks like a man on his last legs the whole match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know how real that is, because I can't imagine Slaughter can do a match this long of this pace very well.
Mm-hmm.
But man, he gives such a good dying performance, I'd say.
Yeah, and he's able to and he even, you know, like shows a little bit of just like tenacity almost. I mean, just kind of, you know, Hogan's beating on him, and but Hogan can't quite like finish it, you know, even after like he does 10 punches in the corner, tosses him repeatedly into the turnbuckle, mm-hmm. and he's only able to get two. And you know, kind of Hogan is frustrated, which is when he ends up going to the second rope. And one little awkward thing where Slaughter sort of catches him, you know, when he's trying to do the axe handle, but then it didn't really get him with a good shot. Then kind of Hogan rakes the eyes. Mm-hmm. And
there is a point in the match sort of later on when something, I feel like something went wrong because Slaughter has Hogan down for a pin, and the pin goes to like 10, but he can't get it because Adnan's on the outside haranguing the referee.
Yeah, that was really weird. Yeah. The second time that he went up, Adnan grabbed the leg and then Slaughter slammed him off, and that's kind of when Slaughter's able to take control. But you're right, yeah. That was very strange. That part was strange, and there was also a strange part where, like, kind of after Slaughter works him over for a bit, you know, kind of really focusing on the back and hits him with some chair shots outside, chokes him with the cable, then...
Oh, yeah, can we talk about the chair shots? This is the first WrestleMania main event with chair shots to the head.
Sure. I believe that's true.
I mean, nobody, like, there was no, like, even vaguely hardcore matches before this one in WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. I would say. Like, was this the first steel chair in WrestleMania?
No. Hogan hits DiBiase in the back with the steel chair at WrestleMania 4, for sure.
To the head, though, maybe.
Well, yeah. To the head, I don't remember, but it's, you know, I'm not sure. It wasn't common, that's for sure. It was very uncommon.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't. Now that I'm watching this match, I'm like, wow, these are definitely like kind of hardcore match elements, like the blood.
Yeah.
The chair shots, all the sort of hardcore stuff on the outside. I don't know. It's like I'm really enjoying this match as an adult, and I hated it as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. One weird things where Slaughter does a Boston Crab like really close to the ropes. Like it's so like obvious that Hogan should like reach over and just grab the ropes, but like
and he just doesn't.
Takes forever to do it. Like I think the idea is like Adnan's supposed to kind of be there and supposed to like help like provide pressure or whatever, but they don't really focus on that. And even like Regis Philbin, who is also doing commentary with Heenan and Gorilla, even points out like, hey, why isn't Hulk go for the ropes? But so when Regis can understand the flaws in psychology in your match, you have some issues. But
can we talk about Adnan for a sec?
We certainly can.
Who is he and why is he here?
Well, am I telling your 8-year-old or am I telling your adult that,
you know what, start with the 8-year-old, because then you can sort of explain like how he's a Iraqi type guy, and then tell my 27-year-old as to why they went with him and not the Sheik like they would eventually do.
Well, your 8-year-old is that he is a general in Saddam's army, and he's there to help provide a Slaughter with guidance to propel him to the title.
So why is he so bad at it?
well, like, you know,
you ruined so many beats in this match.
Yeah, he was a little he was definitely a little off. He was you know, he was a AWA guy forever and got a lot of heat.
He was a wrestler. Okay.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was a wrestler and manager throughout the entire 80s in the AWA. He feuded with Vern Gagne. I mean, he was a top foreign heel there for quite a long time. Even before that, he actually was a American Indian character. Billy White Wolf, I think. You know, I've listened to some interviews with him. I think he's sort of a notorious, you know, BSer. But I think he's also, I'm not sure if he's always, I think he actually is Iraqi. I'm not sure if he's always consistently represented Iraq. He may have, you know, obviously, you know, Middle Eastern heels in wrestling can often represent more than just one country, even if those countries are completely different from each other, and even if there are geopolitical odds. The, you know, going from Iran to Iraq was not that uncommon during this time in wrestling. So yeah, he was you know, he was a pretty well-known guy. I wouldn't have known him when I was 11. You know, I learned all this later, but if I'd watched AWA enough, I would have known. You know, I think, you know, I would have known who he was.
Totally where the territory system comes in handy.
Yeah.
But they would add, later add the Iron Sheik to this lineup and make like a trio of them.
Right. Of course, they renamed him as Colonel Mustafa. They didn't even acknowledge that he was the Iron Sheik until I think much later. They would at least acknowledge that he used to be champion. And I don't know if they'd ever used the Iron Sheik's name, but yeah. You know, and of course, you know, him being Iranian and then representing Iraq is just completely wacky. But
yeah, that's again, as I was saying before, how American media portrays the foreign to its own, right? They simplify things.
Well, to be fair, I don't think they'd simplify it quite that much, but that's.
But they
I think
did.
It's also kind of a wrestling. Well, this is a wrestling thing, not a media. I will agree that the simplify. I don't think they would. Although, you know, your average person probably couldn't tell you that there was much difference between Iran and Iraq. Your average American, right. and probably most places. So.
Fair. Yeah, true. I didn't know. My 8-year-old self is certainly fooled by it.
Right.
It was kind of funny. I had never seen the Iron Sheik before his performance as Colonel Mustafa.
Yeah,
which,
that's interesting.
It, for a long time, painted him in an odd way in my head. But anyways, let's get back to the match and
yes.
to the point where Sergeant Slaughter covers Hogan in the Iraqi flag.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, oh, that's some rich stuff.
Yeah.
For people like me who look at wrestling and try to see a deeper text underneath what they show, there's actually quite a bit here, right? The flag is generally thrown over deceased soldiers, like mm-hmm. fallen soldiers, often in a show of respect. This undermines all that and turns it into a mockery. He spits on him before doing this,
mm-hmm.
and he tries to pin him, and it's lovely symbolism, I think.
Yeah.
You know, good stuff.
Yeah. You know, let it not be said that Slaughter did not completely commit to this character. I mean, mm-hmm. and I'm sure he must have had some apprehensions of doing that. I mean, this was a time when, you know, people knew that wrestling was entertainment to a certain extent, but there were still a lot of believers out there, and there were still, and even if they didn't believe, I mean, this was something that was just going to generate, like, you know, such insane hatred for him. And, you know, he talks about, you know, getting death threats and, you know, and, mm-hmm. and all, and a lot of other things. And, you know, I think he's sort of a guy who's a little notorious for maybe some exaggerations, but still, it's not hard to believe that he, you know, had to deal with a lot of hassle, you know, it ended his career, in a sense where, you know, he kind of came back as a babyface, you know, kind of awkwardly, you know, like a little bit like a year after this. But I mean, no one, you know, he was never a guy that anyone could ever take seriously or everyone could like really get behind again. Now, you know, mm-hmm. in later years, you know, he kind of just came back as commissioner and would come back for cameos and would be kind of like a cult guy. Mm-hmm. And then people would kind of forget about this. But, you know, it certainly had a major effect on his career. And I don't know if they had any plans of, like, you know, having him be like a babyface star again. But there was kind of no going back from this. You know what I mean?
I agree. It's one of those sort of the sad side effect of working in an entertainment capacity where people believe that the character you're playing is you, even if they know that what you're doing is fake. They attribute what you do in that as a performer to who you are.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right. No. Like, people for forever thought of Hulk Hogan as the character Hulk Hogan, when later on we would learn that his real persona is very different from that, or at least a twisted, mutated version of it. And of course, you know, the character, like the person, Sergeant Slaughter, I don't even know his real name. The person is obviously in no way a foreign sympathizer or whatever. But because his character chose to go down this path, you can't help but look at him with a little bit of, I guess, like xenophobic distrust.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things that completely, obviously, you know, changed the course of his character, changed the course of, you know, his life, you know, in mm-hmm. a lot of respects. And I don't know if anyone, I don't know if you could do that today, and whether anyone would would, you know, permanently ascribe, like permanently would have like negative feelings toward, let's say, Randy Orton, be, you know, just picking somebody out of, you know, if he suddenly became a, you know, sympathizer for a country that, you know,
that it's was so much harder to do something like that these days. Like, I look at the character of Muhammad Hassan, who should have had the same trajectory as Slaughter, mm-hmm. you know, and certainly in at the beginning of his run had the same kind of xenophobic heat. But it's so much more complicated now, right? Cartoon foreigners don't really work today. Right, because we know that everybody's human. We know that everybody has, you know, desires for freedom and yada yada yada. The recent wave of protests and civil wars over the last few months should remind us all of that. That everybody ultimately wants the same happiness for everyone around the world. You know, and so it's so much more difficult now than it was in the 90s, especially the early 90s, when like Sylvester Stallone and Steven Seagal movies were all the rage, to do a sort of domestic versus foreign story.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to think that things have changed a lot, but I don't know if they've changed that much. Like I do think that I do think maybe that it could work, and I'm not saying that they should ever do it, but And they are – one thing that has definitely changed for them is that they are much more of a worldwide company than they were in mm-hmm. 1991. So, you know, you have to think about how things will play, you know, outside of the United States much more than you did then. I think, you know, Canada and maybe the United Kingdom were, you know, really their only other significant markets, and they were, you know, very, very small compared to the United States. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think that would have a large effect on whether they would ever try anything like that again. You know,
if anything, we've turned to the point where almost all of the ethnic characters on the show are heroes, Alberto Del Rio excluded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know a lot of people have kind of made consider like Santino and Kozlov to kind of be like the Iron Sheik and the and Nikolai Volkov of the, you know, of our era, you know, and they're obviously, you know, comedy baby faces as opposed to
comedy bad guys. Yeah,
comedy bad guys, you know, they were more serious at first and then kind of evolved into comedy bad guys, but you get the point. So
we got away from the match a little. The flag scene ends with Hogan kicking out.
Yeah.
Going on his whole Hogan thing where he does his kick out and boot to the head and bunch of punches and
Hulks
he's invincible.
Out, yeah.
Hulks out. Pin Slaughter does his celebration. The show goes black, right? This is all you see. I don't know if you remember what happens in the home video.
I do remember what happens in the home video. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the brawling before we get to the finish.
Go ahead.
We kind of glanced over that a little bit. And you mentioned, I mean, you know, Slaughter, you know, he gets a chair. He nails Hogan in the face to bust him open. He talked about the chair shots. But mm-hmm. really the intensity in which Slaughter kind of goes after that cut, you know, as Hogan is shaky and groggy, I think is like the strongest part of the match as far as like making it seem like, and not that anybody buys that Slaughter's going to win, but at least like mm-hmm. making Slaughter into more of like a threat and more of like someone who, for lack of a better term, deserves to be in this position. And, you know, he really does. I think there's, you know, really kind of a cool, intense thing where he goes there and then kind of works him in the camel clutch. And one kind of cool thing is like Hogan like tries to fight out of it, you know, kind of harkening back to the first time he won the title when against the Iron Sheik. But instead, you know, instead of allowing him to do that, Slaughter actually releases it, stomps on his back, and then, you know, locks it in again, of course. And then when Hogan tries to power out again, Slaughter shoves him into the corner, and then that leads to the, you know, kind of the draping on his face and, you know, and then, of course, you know, the finish. But I thought that sequence was really good and really interesting and, you know, hearkening back to, you know, one of Hogan's most famous matches and also, you know, kind of the point in the match where Slaughter shined the most.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, and of course, after the match ends, a couple of things that should be worth mentioning is, first of all, this is Hogan becomes the first three-time WWE champion, which is just like, not that
at
like
the time was crazy.
Yeah, right. And and of course now he had six, but that's not even, I don't even know if it's in like the top 10 for
I've got four.
Yeah, exactly. So it's undoubtedly Gorilla Monsoon uses the terms undoubtedly the most memorable main event in pay-per-view history, and you are a part of it. They also, a funny thing which is amusing because we know better now, that during the match, I think it might even be during the Hogan or Warrior Savage match, Gorilla announces that it is officially confirmed that this is the most watched event in pay-per-view history.
Yeah. Impossible knowledge, just a blatant lie.
Yes, exactly. So, and he also uses the term, before we close, he says, put it all to rest, the war is over. So, this another one kind of taking the language of, what was being used as combat operations had just ended in Iraq. So, talk about what happened on the home video.
Now, I don't know if this piece of footage happens during the event or like right after, or if it happens at a different event later on, because you know how like WWE home video will sometimes just like toss in stuff that's relevant to the narrative that might not be chronologically correct. But there's a scene at the end that as a kid made no sense to me. And that's Mean Gene Okerlund is interviewing Hulk Hogan in the back. And he's celebrating and he's all happy. And he's won the title and he's ecstatic. And he walks into an ambush by Slaughter and Adnan. And Slaughter hits him with a fireball.
Yeah.
Like one of those like Japanese trick fireballs, right? That like Muda would use and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he smacks him with a chair and he bloodies him open again. And then he does this awesome thing where he shoves the camera away and it looks all like ECW. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you can clarify. You know dates and stuff better than I do. Did this happen at the end of WrestleMania 7, or was this a separate event?
It did not air at the end of WrestleMania 7. I know that. I believe that I don't.
This is one of those like VHS extras.
Yeah. Now they played it up on TV after it happened. Like they taught, like, I don't know if it was probably the next TV where they, when they reviewed the WrestleMania, they would review what happened and then they would talk about, and then afterward, Slaughter threw a fireball in his face or whatever. So, I mean, I don't know for sure that they taped it afterward, but I imagine they probably did, or maybe they taped it, beforehand and then and just had it there as part of the angle, but I don't know, it felt like to me that it probably did happen, that they taped it certainly that day, when exactly, whether it was really after for sure, I don't know for sure, but I get the feeling that they did,
an odd thing, I think.
Well, I mean, it was obviously to give the feud more juice to, and they extended it to SummerSlam, it's kind of thing. And I mean, it's neat and different in the sense that, like, every time Hogan either completely vanquished his opponent or Warrior, of course, winning WrestleMania 6, but I mean, Hogan still walked out with like his head high, and he might have lost or whatever, but it was still like, it was still, happy moment for everybody. And this kind of gives it like, like a tinge of something different, and I would imagine probably the reason they did it a backstage thing was so in case they, because the fireball can be tricky. Maybe they didn't want to. They want to get a good take of the fireball. Or
it's true.
Yeah, because obviously,
such like a dirty bad guy wrestling trick to use a fireball, and yeah. So random. It's using a magic trick.
Of course, the regular, the original Sheik. I mean, that was his shtick for years. In the 60s and 70s. Of course,
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. He was notorious for doing the fireball. And another guy who does the fireball a lot was Jerry Lawler. He would work it in Memphis quite often.
I gotta watch way more 70s stuff.
You know, I haven't seen a whole lot of the Sheik. I mean, there's not that much available, and really, it doesn't. I mean, it has not aged well at all. But you know, but yeah, he definitely used fire. In fact, I think he used fire to beat Andre. I think I have video of that. I think I have on like the Wrestling Gold series of DVDs.
Okay.
Yeah, from I happen to have those, and I'm pretty sure I know there's a match that Sheik beats Andre, and I'm pretty sure it's by using he throws fire in his face and then it's a count out or something. So.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So, well, I think we've dissected this pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's just it's funny all of the tricks of the different you know classic famous you know foreign heels you know that, that Slaughter worked in here. You know, I mean. You know, he obviously did a lot. I mean, you know, and Slaughter, you know, in his prime was tremendous. I mean, you know, and he had not been very good for, you know, kind of in the later 80s. You know, he really, in AWA, his match quality was not very good. I don't know if that was just age, injuries, shape, just not, you know, not caring or whatever. But yeah, he did. He definitely brought it here. That's for sure. You know? So, yeah, I think that's about all I have here. Certainly,
it's maybe the WrestleMania main event I'm most surprised by rewatching as an adult.
Okay, yeah, it'd be up there for me too. You know, I'd kind of, you know, a few years ago, you know, rewatched it a few times and it definitely gotten a more favorable feeling on like you know the quality of the match. But yeah, this time looking at it, I really did see I saw a lot more in Slaughter's performance I think than I had before. So you know it was good stuff.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we will be back tomorrow with WrestleMania 8 and be talking about the rest of the WrestleManias until the countdown to the big show. So thanks everyone for listening, and goodbye.